Jacqueline Maycumber, state representative for the 7th Legislative District, seat 1.
This was quite a year, no doubt, for the legislature. I'm going to have you give me kind of a synopsis of how the year seemed to you, at least the 2020 session for you.
Well, you know, it was a short session. It was very successful for me personally and the district. I was able to pass legislation for capping insulin costs, which was very personal to me because my son was recently diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And I noticed that the insulin costs and a lot of us people were paying as much as their mortgages for a life-saving medication. I worked across the aisle with the Democrat caucus and the Republicans, and we passed a policy that capped insulin costs for $100 a month for everyone in the state of Washington. But it also, the most important part, it was that it reviewed all life-saving prescription medications with a drug task force that had to include all stakeholders. So it had to include the pharmaceutical companies, the pharmacy benefit managers, and the pharmacists and patients and doctors. And that comes out in the next 2 years. So I'm really looking forward to seeing why prescription and life-saving drugs have increased 500% in the last decade. That was a huge policy passed bipartisan. In addition, I passed quite a few law enforcement policies. Washington State is 50th in the nation for law enforcement officers per capita, which creates this almost reactionary response to policing. I was a former law enforcement officer, and community policing is best. When you're a part of the community, you have time to get to know everybody, from the business owners to the children. And that's difficult in Washington State. So I was able to get a policy fully funded in the budget. My bill that went from 9 academy classes a year to 22, and a couple of those being in Spokane. So the academy classes can be closer to the agencies where they will be working. That passed, and in addition to a crisis incident stress management team, that bill passed, which allows peer-to-peer counseling for first responders, including fire. And so police and fire, if they're having a hard time, suicide rates are up, and first responders, and that gives them a number to call for peer-to-peer counseling. Some of the bigger departments were doing that, but if you were just a half a mile outside a bigger department, you had no one to talk to. So that bill passed, and I believe unanimously, out of the legislature. So for a 60-day session, I had quite a few policies passed, and passed unanimously, and I was very happy to see it.
I know that a lot of policing agencies these days are having a hard time finding enough good qualified candidates. How much can they do in that case? I mean, how does your legislation help with that?
Well, I had another policy that was, it talked about diversity in law enforcement and really bringing up that next generation. It's very difficult now to recruit law enforcement officers, especially if you're a kid and you're only seeing the reactionary policing. So you're only seeing officers come when there's a traumatic event in your family or in your neighborhood. And when you have such few number of law enforcement officers, that's what's happening. They're going from call to call to call, and they're not getting to know the community and the families and the kids. And that's difficult for the next generation, where you see that officer that helped that child, find a better path or get to know them. And that policy, ironically, did not pass last year. It had a high number of co-sponsors, both Republican and Democrat, but it didn't look at something that was needed. That's what the chair said. However, I believe next year this is an important policy because you're really looking at that next generation. But it's been difficult. I mean, there's violence on law enforcement officers right now. It's difficult to want to serve your community and risk your life in a position where, people are really in their darkest moments and they need help. And so making sure people want to be able to do that, risk their families, risk their own lives, we have to kind of turn things around and build up a more community policing behavior.
As the legislature takes up police reform next year, I've been asking candidates, where is the proper place for that discussion? Is it the local level, the state level, a combination of that? What are your feelings about that?
Well, the whole defunding the police, we're already 50th in the nation for law enforcement officers per capita. You're creating more response times. You're creating more crime in the streets and really not being safe in your own home. It's more important that we look at putting money into policing and developing that community policing reform. So, and that does not happen by defunding that police. It only happens by producing more law enforcement officers per capita. Like I mentioned before, only showing up to a call after call after call not only creates more stress on the law enforcement officer and the person going out to each stressful moment and call, but it also creates stress in the community because they want to see the officers playing basketball and getting to know the kids. And I'm a former law enforcement officer. And when you work at a department where you have, multiple people and back, that de-escalation's, a little easier. But when you're constantly responding to calls, that's not easy. We should not be defunding the police. We should actually be putting more into community policing, more into having actual community members being part of the agencies, not less.
Should the state also then put more money into mental health and to substance abuse and some of the other contributors to crime?
Absolutely. And I have voted for that over and over again. I mean, it's so important that we look at the reasons that these things are occurring, the reasons for the violence. And that's something the state of Washington bipartisan has really taken a look at and really making sure that we put our money where our mouth is and that we fund programs. The thing about mental health and opiate abuse is it touches almost everyone in the state of Washington. And it's really becoming epidemic levels. And so making sure that we touch on that, but also making sure that you're safe and that you have law enforcement. It's not either or. We can actually fund both and we can do it successfully without making law enforcement officers or public servants the enemies. They're actually our servants.
So we've heard things about considerations of restrictions on chokeholds, maybe when tear gas can be used, more transparent means for looking at police actions. Which of those do you support, and which of those do you say not good ideas?
Well, so there's quite a few that we're looking at. I believe, and my understanding is that chokeholds are not legal at this point in Washington state. I know as law enforcement officer, it was not a policy while I was in office or in uniform. We are looking at many policies. And I am actually a part of that conversation and happily to be a part of that conversation as a former officer. So I can't say for now what we're going to go towards and what I'm going to support, but we are looking at, moving that direction in a more positive light. But we have to do it hand in hand with making sure that you're not sending one or two officers on dangerous calls all night long.
Well, let me turn to ideas to the coronavirus. We've been living with this collectively for 7 or 8 months. How do you think the governor and his administration have done in terms of responding to it over that time?
When the initial, I actually have my degree in biochemistry. When the initial announcement came through and we were seeing this, move over from Asia, I was a part of that conversation. I really supported the policy providing the funding for making sure that the continuity of state government continued no matter what occurred. I was very vocal in making sure that we actually increased funding. I had major concerns on how long we were going to be responding to this issue. I have yet to be in communication with the governor's office. 7 or 8 months, and there's been little to any communication. I find out as much information on the press releases than anyone else. It's disappointing because I represent, part of the state of Washington, and communication would be very effective in that as we move through this process. Our people are hurting. They're hurting because we have a health crisis, but also we have an economic crisis. And I fear that we will be suffering for many, many years to come as a response to this. And unfortunately, because the governor has taken 100% responsibility of his response to this without communicating with the legislators and elected officials, taking on that response 100% really makes him responsible for the future economic depression that we will continue to suffer from. There's little to no collaboration, and that's really unfortunate at this point.
What do you think about how the governor's administration handled the unemployment fraud situation a few months ago, where the state essentially lost hundreds of millions of dollars from fraudulent claims from overseas?
Well, I'm shocked that this was not responded to and looked at quicker, faster, and also we really didn't see any response or responsibility for this failure. It's very depressing because, you know, every dollar that you pay in your taxes, it's more now. It's harder to get in this economic depression. It's between your kids' basketball shoes or their lunch and now, you know, your tax dollars. And it was the biggest scandal and loss of money in state history. And there's no one taking responsibility. No one saying that they removed, you know, the fraudulent levels or protecting the state of Washington. I am very concerned that we are all going to have to pay for this failure to uphold the standards of unemployment securities. It's very disappointing that your tax dollars weren't held to a higher standard and that your hard-earned money was not protected. And there's a lot of people still suffering. I just want to say that I spend most of my time speaking to people that are really suffering financially, and this made it worse. There are some people that you know, had nothing to do with employment securities that were tagged as fraudulent or had needed those unemployment dollars and didn't get it because of this fraudulent Nigerian scheme that was not protected. And so their unemployment funds were not protected. It's just so disappointing to see these families that really need to pay rent and buy groceries. I'm just very disappointed, and I'm the one who speaks to them. Yeah. And it's been heartbreaking.
Well, let me pivot to public health, and the coronavirus has kind of pointed out the importance of public health in our society, and yet the folks in public health say, hey, we could do more, except we don't have a dedicated funding source to that. Now, the legislature has worked on that in the past year. Do you think more should be done to help continue and improve funding for public health in Washington?
Well, the definition of public health is very broad. I don't know if you mean infectious disease response or how we move forward in that. We really need to look at our responses. I think this has really opened our eyes into what occurs when you have a major global event and what happens for a public health crisis. What that looks like, I don't know. I'm honored to be on the healthcare committee and to be in those conversations. Like I said before, when this COVID response hit, I was very vocal in dedicating actually more funds that were dedicated to COVID. I felt that we needed a quick initial response. So I was, I did think more needed to be dedicated quickly. But at this point, I don't know what that looks like in the future, but I know that we are all willing to work together and make sure that our healthcare response has the healthcare workers have the response they need, and especially the equipment they need. I know my local firefighters, they were cutting up hazmat suits we didn't know what the response was going to be. I mean, really not having PPE has been devastating. And you really looked at what it meant to order at the time of need instead of stockpiling products. So we really saw where we kind of had those gaps in public health. But also, I do want to mention continuity of care. For just not receiving any health care at all and waiting has been very sad for many families. There's been people with cancer diagnosis that haven't been able to get treatment. There's mental health patients that haven't been able to get their continuity of treatment. And it's just so, it's been devastating for everyone all the way across the board on that continuity of care. And we see it from just, you know, dental to regular healthcare to devastating news like cancer. So I really see that I have been in communication on how we can continue continuity of care, even in a crisis, and making sure our healthcare and our first responders have the products they need to protect us and protect themselves.
I'm curious, do you think the Affordable Care Act has been a good thing or a bad thing in the United States?
You know, I work on the state level, and Washington State has been very effective in really making sure we have a stable health care network. I've been working on issues like making sure that you have competitive health insurance available in most counties. See, the way they do it is they bid out per county. And so you could live, you know, a few feet into another county, and then you just don't have the option to really look for competitive health insurance companies. And that's been devastating for some of our rural companies and our entrepreneurs that want to start businesses. And they're looking at premiums and more than they bring home. And so, you know, the federal government can do what they want, but the state of Washington is working to make sure that we provide health insurance for everyone in the state or have the option to buy it affordable. So, you know, we've really worked together on that, and I'm still working to make sure that we can provide the option to get insurance no matter where you live. And I think that's the most important thing. I've had a couple policies that, you know, make sure we don't have counties, what they call bare, where you have no insurance options. And, you know, it's really dangerous. I believe we have 11 counties that are, you know, dangerously close to being bare, and two that only have one insurance company from last time I checked. So we're really close to being dangerous and not having health insurance in those counties. So
I asked that for a reason, because if the U.S. Supreme Court strikes down the Affordable Care Act, I wonder how is Washington prepared then to take on the what will no doubt be an increased demand for health insurance?
Well, Washington State has always been strong in making sure we have increased what would be the baseline of what you call the poverty level. We've increased, and I believe it's at 400% for the healthcare authority to be able to seek insurance. So we've already increased that tremendously to be able to receive access. So it would be, if that occurs, we really have to look at making sure that these insurance companies don't just leave some areas and only bid in the wealthy areas or the healthy areas. So it would be a competitive choice. And that would be the conversations that we would probably be having in the healthcare committee.
I want to pivot to wildfires now. I thought we were going to get off and have a fairly easy wildfire season, and then Labor Day rolls around. Do you think the state of Washington needs to create a dedicated fund for more wildfire prevention and mitigation and suppression?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a conversation that Eastern Washington legislators have been having for many years. You know, why aren't we addressing these high fuel loads? Why aren't we addressing these diseased trees? Why aren't we looking at this when we had for many years? I was at a meeting for the Colville Confederated Tribes, a tribal meeting, and one of the elected elders asked me, well, why don't you people take care of your forest? And it was really eye-opening because you see how healthy their forests are and how they are working to make sure, you know, they take down those diseased trees and they take out that high fuel load for, and they said, for the elk, for the deer, why aren't we doing that? And so we really need to look at why we aren't being active managers of our forests for not just forest health, but also the health of our communities. It's not healthy to breathe a smoke. And I really want to see us looking to be active managers in our forests, but also providing jobs. But also, we have this cross-laminated timber, which is a green building material. We have a processor in Colville that uses locally sourced products, and then we have one in Spokane. And these are huge because they're, you know, carbon zero building material, which you really want to see as we move forward into the future in innovation. And we also have biochar and many other products that can come from these, you know, diseased trees and these fuel loads that we can move to being energy sources. So we need to look towards innovation and healthy forests.
Well, I guess the Lands Commissioner would agree with you, but she'll say in order to do that, it takes money. In order for us to be able to isolate certain forests and treat them. It takes a lot of money, but I don't have the money to do it. And so the legislature needs to give me more of a taxing authority or money of some kind. Do you think the legislature is going to be open to that at a time when the budget's pretty tight?
Well, we spend that amount of money anyway in firefighting. So just to kind of look at last year's budget, Representative Joel Krutz had an amendment for $53.4 million to be dedicated to forest management. That was voted down in the budget, and it did not get the votes to pass, unfortunately. But we end up spending close to that in firefighting. So we really just need to look at what our priorities are. Is our priorities fighting fires and protecting our homes, or is it preventative? So the way you budget really matters when you look at the future. So if we do dedicate that $53 million to forest management, we may not be spending it the next year in fire management. So proper budgeting also helps preventative measures too. So I don't know what that, you know, the future will hold for dedicated sources or how that would go. But I know the Republican caucus and some members have really been active in voicing, you know, spend it today. Don't spend it tomorrow. We've had times where we spent upwards to, I believe, $100 million in a biennium on forest fires and firefighting. So really looking at changing how you spend your money makes a difference.
Okay, I'll get one more issue, and then I'll sort of go toward finishing up. So how has the state handled wolf interactions with livestock up in your neck of the woods? Is shooting wolves the right, is that the right way to go?
Well, wolves, you know, it's unfortunate. I've been in some of these meetings, and I will admit I'm not the point of contact for the wolf issue. But I've listened to wildlife managers and biologists in other states, in Montana and other states where they have been very active in management, where packs have lived, and I found this one just so important. Packs have lived by cattle ranches or rangelands, one in particular, 6 years without a depredation. And what had happened is that this particular state was very active in the beginning to make sure that they responded quickly during a depredation. And the wolf will learn quickly that not to eat, you know, the cattle or attack families, animals. And so now they've been lived side by side without any issues for many years. And to me, that was almost, it was sad to hear that there is success in doing things quickly without litigation, without lawsuits from other states. A lot of this litigation comes from California that stops the Department of Fish and Wildlife from enacting policies that were defined quickly when wolves were really coming in. And so you really see us defining our management policies by litigating, not by science. And that's sad because other states have found successful ways of living together. And I would really like to see that in Washington state. I would like to see quick mitigation where you're not seeing it occur over years. You're not seeing depredation occur over long periods of time. We're losing cattle ranches almost by the hour. And those are the ones who take down those high fuel loads for forest fires too. And that's healthy free-range beef that's not being produced and locked up somewhere. That's the healthy stuff for your family. So there are ways we can live together, but we can't be litigated into it. And it's unfortunate that the state of Washington hasn't really figured out what some of the other states have. And that is a quick response really works for everyone involved.
All right. So you are asking people for their vote, but I've been asking candidates, when you have the ballot in your hand, what are the characteristics that you look for in candidates who are asking for your vote?
I appreciate that vote because I was just talking, or appreciate that question because I was just talking to my children about that. I really look for integrity and the people who care about the people they serve. It's easy to talk about leading, but it's really hard talking about serving. And I really look for those candidates that are really willing to serve the people. And it's hard to put your neck out there and fight for what's right no matter what your political beliefs are. And sometimes you have to fight to make sure your constituents have the best thing for them, and it's the best decision for them. And so I really look for those candidates who are willing to serve, willing to do the hard work, and really, be my voice in the area that I need it. And that takes a servant heart, and that's difficult to find sometimes.